of huge bangs shook the castle, and a great cavalcade of transparent figures galloped past on horses, their heads screaming with bloodlust under their arms. Harry staggered to his feet when the headless hunt had passed and looked around. The battle was still going on all around him. He could hear more screams than those of the retreating ghosts. Panic flared within him. "Where's Ginny?" he said sharply. "She was here. She was supposed to be going back into the room of requirement." "Blimey, do you reckon it'll still work after that fire?" asked Ron. But he too got to his feet, rubbing his chest and looking left and right. "Shall we split up and look?"
"No,"
said Hermione, getting to her feet too. Malfoy and Goyle remained slumped hopelessly on the corridor floor. Neither of them had wands.
"Let's stick together. I say we go. Harry, what's that on your arm?"
"What?
Oh, yeah."
He pulled the diadem from his wrist and held it up. It was still hot, blackened with soot, but as he looked at it closely, he was just able to make out the tiny words etched upon it. "Wit beyond measure is man's greatest treasure." A blood-like substance, dark and tarry, seemed to be leaking from the diadem. Suddenly Harry felt the thing vibrate violently, then break apart in his hands, and as it did so, he thought he heard the faintest, most distant scream of pain, echoing not from the grounds or the castle, but from the thing that had just fragmented in his fingers.
"It must have been fiend fire,"
whimpered Hermione, her eyes on the broken pieces.
"Sorry?"
"Fiend fire. Cursed fire. It's one of the substances that destroy Horcruxes. But I would never, ever have dared use it. It's so dangerous. How did Crabbe know how to..."
"Must have learned from the Carrows," said Harry grimly.
"Shame he wasn't concentrating when they mentioned how to stop it, really," said Ron,
whose hair, like Hermione's, was singed, and whose face was blackened. "If he hadn't tried to kill us all, I'd be quite sorry he was dead."
"But don't you realize,"
whispered Hermione,
"this means if we can just get the snake..."
But she broke off as yells and shouts and the unmistakable noises of dueling filled the corridor. Harry looked around and his heart seemed to fail. Death Eaters had penetrated Hogwarts. Fred and Percy had just backed into view, both of them dueling masked and hooded men. Harry, Ron, and Hermione ran forward to help. Jets of light flew in every direction, and the man dueling Percy backed off fast. Then his hood slipped, and they saw the high forehead and streaked hair.
"Hello, Minister!"
bellowed Percy, sending a neat jinx straight at Thickness, who dropped his wand and clawed at the front of his robes, apparently in awful discomfort.
"Did I mention I'm resigning?" "You're joking, Purse!"
shouted Fred, as the Death Eater he was battling collapsed under the weight of three separate stunning spells. Thickness had fallen to the ground with tiny spikes erupting all over him. He seemed to be turning into some form of sea urchin. Fred looked at Percy with glee.
"You actually are joking, Purse. I don't think I've heard you joke since you were..."
The air exploded. They had been grouped together, Harry, Ron, Hermione, Fred, and Percy, the two Death Eaters at their feet, one stunned, the other transfigured. And in that fragment of a moment, when danger seemed temporarily at bay, the world was rent apart. Harry felt himself flying through the air, and all he could do was hold as tightly as possible to that thin stick of wood that was his one and only weapon, and shield his head in his arms. He heard the screams and yells of his companions without a hope of knowing what had happened to them. And then the world resolved itself into pain and semi-darkness. He was half buried in the wreckage of a corridor that had been subjected to a terrible attack. Cold air told him that the side of the castle had been blown away, and hot stickiness on his cheek told him that he was bleeding copiously. Then he heard a terrible cry that pulled at his insides, that expressed agony of a kind neither flame nor curse could cause, and he stood up, swaying, more frightened than he had been that day, more frightened, perhaps, than he had been in his life. And Hermione was struggling to her feet in the wreckage, and three red-headed men were grouped on the ground where the wall had blasted apart. Harry grabbed Hermione's hand as they staggered and stumbled over stone and wood.
"No! No! No!"
someone was shouting.
"No! Fred! No!"
And Percy was shaking his brother, and Ron was kneeling beside them, and Fred's eyes stared without seeing. the ghost of his last laugh still etched upon his face. Chapter 32. The Elder Wand. The world had ended, so why had the battle not ceased, the castle fallen silent in horror, and every combatant laid down their arms? Harry's mind was in free fall, spinning out of control, unable to grasp the impossibility, because Fred Weasley could not be dead. The evidence of all his senses must be lying. And then a body fell past the hole blown into the side of the school, and curses flew in at them from the darkness, hitting the wall behind their heads. "Get down!" Harry shouted, as more curses flew through the night. He and Ron had both grabbed Hermione and pulled her to the floor, but Percy lay across Fred's body, shielding it from further harm. And when Harry shouted, "Percy, come on! We've got to move!" he shook his head. "Percy!" Harry saw tear tracks streaking the grime coating Ron's face as he seized his elder brother's shoulders and pulled. But Percy would not budge.
"Percy, you can't do anything for him. We're going to..."
Hermione screamed, and Harry, turning, did not need to ask why. A monstrous spider, the size of a small car, was trying to climb through the huge hole in the wall. One of Aragog's descendants had joined the fight. Ron and Harry shouted together. Their spells collided, and the monster was blown backward, its legs jerking horribly, and vanished into the darkness.
"It brought friends!"
Harry called to the others, glancing over the edge of the castle through the hole in the wall the curses had blasted. More giant spiders were climbing the side of the building, liberated from the forbidden forest into which the Death Eaters must have penetrated. Harry fired stunning spells down upon them, knocking the lead monster into its fellows, so that they rolled back down the building and out of sight. Then more curses came soaring over Harry's head, so close he felt the force of them blow his hair.
"Let's move, now!"
Pushing Hermione ahead of him with Ron, Harry stooped to seize Fred's body under the armpits. Percy, realizing what Harry was trying to do, stopped clinging to the body and helped. Together, crouching low to avoid the curses flying at them from the grounds, they hauled Fred out of the way.
"Here,"
said Harry, and they placed him in a niche where a suit of armor had stood earlier. He could not bear to look at Fred a second longer than he had to, and after making sure that the body was well hidden, he took off after Ron and Hermione. Malfoy and Goyle had vanished, but at the end of the corridor, which was now full of dust and falling masonry, glass long gone from the windows, he saw many people running backward and forward. Whether friends or foes, he could not tell. Rounding the corner, Percy let out a bull-like roar,
"Rookwood!"
and sprinted off in the direction of a tall man who was pursuing a couple of students.
"Harry, in here!"
Hermione screamed. She had pulled Ron behind a tapestry. They seemed to be wrestling together, and for one mad second, Harry thought that they were embracing again. Then he saw that Hermione was trying to restrain Ron, to stop him running after Percy.
"Listen to me! Listen, Ron! I want to help! I want to kill Death Eaters!"
His face was contorted, smeared with dust and smoke, and he was shaking with rage and grief.
"Ron, we're the only ones who can end it. Please, Ron, we need the snake. We've got to kill the snake,"
said Hermione. But Harry knew how Ron felt. Pursuing another Horcrux could not bring the satisfaction of revenge. He too wanted to fight, to punish them, the people who had killed Fred, and he wanted to find the other Weasleys, and above all, make sure, make quite sure, that Ginny was not... But he could not permit that idea to form in his mind.
"We will fight," Hermione said. "We'll have to reach the snake. But let's not lose sight now of what we're supposed to be doing. We're the only ones who can end it."
She was crying, too, and she wiped her face on her torn and singed sleeve as she spoke, but she took great heaving breaths to calm herself as, still keeping a tight hold on Ron, she turned to Harry.
"You need to find out where Voldemort is, because he'll have the snake with him, won't he? Do it, Harry. Look inside him."
Why was it so easy? Because his scar had been burning for hours, yearning to show him Voldemort's thoughts? He closed his eyes on her command, and at once the screams and the bangs and all the discordant sounds of the battle were drowned until they became distant, as though he stood far, far away from them. He was standing in the middle of a desolate but strangely familiar room, with peeling paper on the walls and all the windows boarded except for one. The sounds of the assault on the castle were muffled and distant. The single unblocked window revealed distant bursts of light where the castle stood, but inside the room it was dark except for a solitary oil lamp. He was rolling his wand between his fingers, watching it, his thoughts on the room in the castle, the secret room only he had ever found, the room like the chamber that you had to be clever and cunning and inquisitive to discover. He was confident that the boy would not find the diadem, although Dumbledore's puppet had come much farther than he had ever expected. Too far. "My lord," said a voice, desperate and cracked. He turned. There was Lucius Malfoy, sitting in the darkest corner, ragged, and still bearing the marks of the punishment he had received after the boy's last escape. One of his eyes remained closed and puffy.
"My lord, please, my son."
"If your son is dead, Lucius, it is not my fault. He did not come and join me like the rest of the Slytherins. Perhaps he has decided to befriend Harry Potter."
"No, never," whispered Malfoy.
"You must hope not."
Aren't you afraid, my lord, that Potter might die at another hand but yours?" asked Malfoy, his voice shaking. "Wouldn't it be, forgive me, more prudent to call off this battle, enter the castle and seek him yourself?
"Do not pretend, Lucius. You wish the battle to cease so that you can discover what has happened to your son. And I do not need to seek Potter. Before the night is out, Potter will have come to find me."
Voldemort dropped his gaze once more to the wand in his fingers. It troubled him, and those things that troubled Lord Voldemort needed to be rearranged.
"Go and fetch Snape."
"Snape, my lord?"
"Snape. Now. I need him. There is a service I require from him. Go."
Frightened, stumbling a little through the gloom, Lucius left the room. Voldemort continued to stand there, twirling the wand between his fingers, staring at it.
"It is the only way, Nagini,"
he whispered, and he looked around. And there was the great thick snake, now suspended in midair, twisting gracefully within the enchanted, protected space he had made for her, a starry, transparent sphere somewhere between glittering cage and tank. With a gasp, Harry pulled back and opened his eyes. At the same moment, his ears were assaulted with the screeches and cries, the smashes and bangs of battle.
"He's in the Shrieking Shack. The snake's with him. It's got some sort of magical protection around it. He's just sent Lucius Malfoy to find Snape."
"Voldemort sitting in the Shrieking Shack," said Hermione, outraged. He's not even fighting."
"He doesn't think he needs to fight," said Harry. "He thinks I'm going to go to him."
"But why?"
"He knows I'm after Horcruxes. He's keeping Nagini close beside him. Obviously I'm going to have to go to him to get near the thing."
"Right," said Ron, squaring his shoulders. "So, you can't go. That's what he wants, what he's expecting. You stay here and look after Hermione, and I'll go and get it."
Harry cut across Ron. "You two stay here. I'll go under the cloak, and I'll be back as soon as I..."
"No," said Hermione. "It makes much more sense if I take the cloak and..."
"Don't even think about it," Ron snarled at her.
Before Hermione could get farther than,
"Ron, I'm just as capable..."
The tapestry at the top of the staircase on which they stood was ripped open.
"Potter!"
Two masked Death Eaters stood there, but even before their wands were fully raised, Hermione shouted,
"Glissio!"
The stairs beneath their feet flattened into a chute, and she, Harry and Ron hurtled down it, unable to control their speed, but so fast that the Death Eaters' stunning spells flew far over their heads. They shot through the concealing tapestry at the bottom,
and spun onto the floor, hitting the opposite wall.
"Duo!"
cried Hermione, pointing her wand at the tapestry, and there were two loud, sickening crunches as the tapestry turned to stone and the Death Eaters pursuing them crumpled against it.
"Get back!"
shouted Ron, and he, Harry, and Hermione flattened themselves against a door as a herd of galloping desks thundered past, shepherded by a sprinting Professor McGonagall. She appeared not to notice them. Her hair had come down, and there was a gash on her cheek. As she turned the corner, they heard her scream,
"Charge!"
"Harry, you get the cloak on," said Hermione.
"Never mind us."
But he threw it over all three of them, large though they were. He doubted anyone would see their disembodied feet through the dust that clogged the air, the falling stone, the shimmer of spells. They ran down the next staircase and found themselves in a corridor full of duelers. The portraits on either side of the fighters were crammed with figures screaming advice and encouragement, while Death Eaters, both masked and unmasked, dueled students and teachers. Dean had won himself a wand, for he was face to face with Dolohov. Parvati with Travers. Harry, Ron, and Hermione raised their wands at once, ready to strike, but the duelers were weaving and darting around so much that there was a strong likelihood of hurting one of their own side if they cast curses. Even as they stood braced, looking for the opportunity to act, there came a great
whee!
And, looking up, Harry saw Peeves zooming over them, dropping Snargaluff pods down onto the Death Eaters, whose heads were suddenly engulfed in wriggling green tubers like fat worms.
Ah!
A fistful of tubers had hit the cloak over Ron's head. The slimy green roots were suspended improbably in midair as Ron tried to shake them loose.
"Someone's invisible there!"
shouted a masked Death Eater, pointing. Dean made the most of the Death Eater's momentary distraction, knocking him out with a stunning spell. Dolohov attempted to retaliate, and Parvati shot a body-bind curse at him.
"Let's go!"
Harry yelled, and he, Ron, and Hermione gathered the cloak tightly around themselves and pelted, heads down, through the midst of the fighters, slipping a little in pools of Snargaluff juice toward the top of the marble staircase into the entrance hall.
"I'm Draco Malfoy! I'm Draco! I'm on your side!"
Draco was on the upper landing, pleading with another masked Death Eater. Harry stunned the Death Eater as they passed. Malfoy looked around, beaming for his savior, and Ron punched him from under the cloak. Malfoy fell backward on top of the Death Eater, his mouth bleeding, utterly bemused.
"And that's the second time we've saved your life tonight, you two-faced bastard!"
Ron yelled. There were more duelers all over the stairs and in the hall. Death Eaters everywhere, Harry looked. Yaxley, close to the front doors, in combat with Flitwick, a masked Death Eater dueling Kingsley right beside them. Students ran in every direction, some carrying or dragging injured friends. Harry directed a stunning spell toward the masked Death Eater. It missed, but nearly hit Neville, who had emerged from nowhere, brandishing armfuls of venomous tentacula, which looped itself happily around the nearest Death Eater and began reeling him in. Harry, Ron, and Hermione sped down the marble staircase. Glass shattered to their left, and the Slytherin hourglass that had recorded house points spilled its emeralds everywhere, so that people slipped and staggered as they ran. Two bodies fell from the balcony overhead as they reached the ground, and a grey blur that Harry took for an animal sped four-legged across the hall to sink its teeth into one of the fallen.
"No!"
shrieked Hermione, and with a deafening blast from her wand, Fenrir Greyback was thrown backward from the feebly stirring body of Lavender Brown. He hit the marble banisters and struggled to return to his feet. Then, with a bright white flash and a crack, a crystal ball fell on top of his head, and he crumpled to the ground and did not move.
"I have more!"
shrieked Professor Trelawney from over the banisters.
"More for any who want them! Here!"
And with a movement like a tennis serve, she heaved another enormous crystal sphere from her bag, waved her wand through the air, and caused the ball to speed across the hall and smash through a window. At the same moment, the heavy wooden front doors burst open, and more of the gigantic spiders forced their way into the entrance hall. Screams of terror rent the air. The fighters scattered, Death Eaters and Hogwartians alike, and red and green jets of light flew into the midst of the oncoming monsters,
which shuddered and reared, more terrifying than ever.
"How do we get out?"
yelled Ron over all the screaming, but before either Harry or Hermione could answer, they were bowled aside. Hagrid had come thundering down the stairs, brandishing his flowery pink umbrella.
"Don't hurt him! Don't hurt him!" he yelled.
"Hagrid, no!"
Harry forgot everything else. He sprinted out from under the cloak, running bent double to avoid the curses illuminating the whole hall.
"Hagrid! Come back!"
But he was not even halfway to Hagrid when he saw it happen. Hagrid vanished amongst the spiders, and with a great scurrying, a foul, swarming movement, they retreated under the onslaught of spells, Hagrid buried in their midst.
"Hagrid!"
Harry heard someone calling his own name, whether friend or foe, he did not care. He was sprinting down the front steps into the dark grounds, and the spiders were swarming away with their prey, and he could see nothing of Hagrid at all.
"Hagrid!"
He thought he could make out an enormous arm waving from the midst of the spider swarm, but as he made to chase after them, his way was impeded by a monumental foot, which swung down out of the darkness and made the ground on which he stood shudder. He looked up. A giant stood before him, 20 feet high, its head hidden in shadow, nothing but its tree-like, hairy shins illuminated by light from the castle doors. With one brutal, fluid movement, it smashed a massive fist through an upper window, and glass rained down upon Harry, forcing him back under the shelter of the doorway.
"Oh, my!"
shrieked Hermione, as she and Ron caught up with Harry, and gazed upward at the giant, now trying to seize people through the window above.
"Don't!"
Ron yelled, grabbing Hermione's hand as she raised her wand.
"Stun him, and he'll crush half the castle!"
"Hagrid!"
Grawp came lurching around the corner of the castle. Only now did Harry realize that Grawp was indeed an undersized giant. The gargantuan monster trying to crush people on the upper floors looked around and let out a roar. The stone steps trembled as he stomped toward his smaller kin, and Grawp's lopsided mouth fell open, showing yellow, half-brick-sized teeth, and then they launched themselves at each other with the savagery of lions.
"Run!"
Harry roared. The night was full of hideous yells and blows as the giants wrestled, and he seized Hermione's hand and tore down the steps into the grounds, Ron bringing up the rear. Harry had not lost hope of finding and saving Hagrid. He ran so fast that they were halfway toward the forest before they were brought up short again. The air around them had frozen. Harry's breath caught and solidified in his chest. Shapes moved out in the darkness, swirling figures of concentrated blackness, moving in a great wave toward the castle, their faces hooded and their breath rattling. Ron and Hermione closed in beside him as the sounds of fighting behind them grew suddenly muted, deadened, because a silence only Dementors could bring was falling thickly through the night, and Fred was gone, and Hagrid was surely dying or already dead.
"Come on, Harry," said Hermione's voice from a very long way away. "Patronus is Harry. Come on."
He raised his wand, but a dull hopelessness was spreading through him. How many more lay dead that he did not yet know about? He felt as though his soul had already half left his body.
"Harry, come on,"
screamed Hermione. 100 Dementors were advancing, gliding toward them, sucking their way closer to Harry's despair, which was like a promise of a feast. He saw Ron's silver terrier burst into the air, flicker feebly, and expire. He saw Hermione's otter twist in midair and fade, and his own wand trembled in his hand, and he almost welcomed the oncoming oblivion, the promise of nothing, of no feeling. And then a silver hare, a boar, and a fox soared past Harry, Ron, and Hermione's heads. The Dementors fell back before the creature's approach. 3 more people had arrived out of the darkness to stand beside them, their wands outstretched, continuing to cast their Patronuses. Luna, Ernie, and Seamus.
"That's right,"
said Luna encouragingly, as if they were back in the room of requirement, and this was simply spell practice for the DA.
"That's right, Harry. Come on, think of something happy."
"Something happy?" he said. His voice cracked.
"We're all still here," she whispered. "We're still fighting. Come on now."
There was a silver spark, then a wavering light, and then, with the greatest effort it had ever cost him, the stag burst from the end of Harry's wand. It cantered forward, and now the Dementors scattered in earnest, and immediately the night was mild again. But the sounds of the surrounding battle were loud in his ears.
"Can't thank you enough,"
said Ron shakily, turning to Luna, Ernie, and Seamus.
"You just saved."
With a roar and an earthquaking tremor, another giant came lurching out of the darkness from the direction of the forest, brandishing a club taller than any of them.
"Run!"
Harry shouted again, but the others needed no telling. They all scattered, and not a second too soon, for next moment the creature's vast foot had fallen exactly where they had been standing. Harry looked round. Ron and Hermione were following him, but the other three had vanished back into the battle.
"Let's get out of range!"
yelled Ron, as the giant swung its club again, and its bellows echoed through the night, across the grounds where bursts of red and green light continued to illuminate the darkness.
"The romping willow," said Harry. "Go!"
Somehow he walled it all up in his mind, crammed it into a small space into which he could not look now. Thoughts of Fred and Hagrid, and his terror for all the people he loved, scattered in and outside the castle, must all wait. Because they had to run, had to reach the snake and Voldemort, because that was, as Hermione said, the only way to end it. He sprinted, half believing he could outdistance death itself, ignoring the jets of light flying in the darkness all around him, and the sound of the lake crashing like the sea, and the creaking of the Forbidden Forest, though the night was windless. Through grounds that seemed themselves to have risen in rebellion, he ran faster than he had ever moved in his life. And it was he who saw the great tree first, the willow that protected the secret at its roots with whip-like slashing branches. Panting and gasping, Harry slowed down, skirting the willow's swiping branches, peering through the darkness toward its thick trunk, trying to see the single knot in the bark of the old tree that would paralyze it. Ron and Hermione caught up, Hermione so out of breath she could not speak.
How are we going to get in?
Panted Ron.
I can see the place. If we just had Crookshanks again.
Crookshanks?
Wheezed Hermione, bent double, clutching her chest.
Are you a wizard, or what?
Oh, right, yeah.
Ron looked around, then directed his wand at a twig on the ground and said,
Wingardium Leviosa.
The twig flew up from the ground, spun through the air as if caught by a gust of wind, then zoomed directly at the trunk through the willow's ominously swaying branches. It jabbed at a place near the roots, and at once the writhing tree became still.
Perfect,
panted Hermione.
Wait.
For one teetering second, while the crashes and booms of the battle filled the air, Harry hesitated. Voldemort wanted him to do this, wanted him to come. Was he leading Ron and Hermione into a trap? But then the reality seemed to close upon him, cruel and plain. The only way forward was to kill the snake, and the snake was where Voldemort was, and Voldemort was at the end of this tunnel.
"Harry, we're coming. Just get in there,"
said Ron, pushing him forward. Harry wriggled into the earthy passage hidden in the tree's roots. It was a much tighter squeeze than it had been the last time they had entered it. The tunnel was low-ceilinged. They had had to double up to move through it nearly 4 years previously. Now there was nothing for it but to crawl. Harry went first, his wand illuminated, expecting at any moment to meet barriers. But none came. They moved in silence. Harry's gaze fixed upon the swinging beam of the wand held in his fist. At last the tunnel began to slope upward, and Harry saw a sliver of light ahead. Hermione tugged at his ankle.
"The cloak," she whispered. "Put the cloak on."
He groped behind him, and she forced the bundle of slippery cloth into his free hand. With difficulty he dragged it over himself, murmured, "Nox," extinguishing his wand light, and continued on his hands and knees as silently as possible, all his senses straining, expecting every second to be discovered, to hear a cold, clear voice, see a flash of green light. And then he heard voices coming from the room directly ahead of them, only slightly muffled by the fact that the opening at the end of the tunnel had been blocked up by what looked like an old crate. Hardly daring to breathe, Harry edged right up to the opening and peered through a tiny gap left between crate and wall. The room beyond was dimly lit, but he could see Nagini swirling and coiling like a serpent underwater, safe in her enchanted starry sphere, which floated unsupported in midair. He could see the edge of a table and a long-fingered white hand toying with a wand. Then Snape spoke, and Harry's heart lurched. Snape was inches away from where he crouched, hidden. "My lord, their resistance is crumbling."
"And it is doing so without your help," said Voldemort in his high, clear voice. "Skilled wizard though you are, Severus, I do not think you will make much difference now. We are almost there. Almost."
"Let me find the boy. Let me bring you Potter. I know I can find him, my lord. Please." Snape strode past the gap, and Harry drew back a little, keeping his eyes fixed upon Nagini, wondering whether there was any spell that might penetrate the protection surrounding her. But he could not think of anything. One failed attempt, and he would give away his position. Voldemort stood up. Harry could see him now, see the red eyes, the flattened serpentine face, the pallor of him gleaming slightly in the semi-darkness.
"I have a problem, Severus," said Voldemort softly. "My lord," said Snape.
Voldemort raised the Elder Wand, holding it as delicately and precisely as a conductor's baton.
"Why doesn't it work for me, Severus?"
In the silence, Harry imagined he could hear the snake hissing slightly as it coiled and uncoiled. Or was it Voldemort's sibilant sigh lingering on the air?
My lord," said Snape blankly. "I do not understand. You have performed extraordinary magic with that wand."
"No," said Voldemort.
"I have performed my usual magic. I am extraordinary, but this wand, no. It has not revealed the wonders it has promised. I feel no difference between this wand and the one I procured from Ollivander all those years ago."
Voldemort's tone was musing, calm, but Harry's scar had begun to throb and pulse. Pain was building in his forehead, and he could feel that controlled sense of fury building inside Voldemort.
"No difference,"
said Voldemort again. Snape did not speak. Harry could not see his face. He wondered whether Snape sensed danger, was trying to find the right words to reassure his master. Voldemort started to move around the room. Harry lost sight of him for seconds as he prowled, speaking in that same measured voice, while the pain and fury mounted in Harry.
"I have thought long and hard, Severus. Do you know why I have called you back from the battle?"
And for a moment, Harry saw Snape's profile. His eyes were fixed upon the coiling snake in its enchanted cage.
"No, my lord, but I beg you will let me return. Let me find Potter." "You sound like Lucius. Neither of you understands Potter as I do. He does not need finding. Potter will come to me. I know his weakness, you see. 'Tis one great flaw. He will hate watching the others struck down around him, knowing that it is for him that it happens. He will want to stop it at any cost. He will come."
"But my lord, he might be killed accidentally by one other than yourself."
"My instructions to my Death Eaters have been perfectly clear. Capture Potter, kill his friends, the more the better, but do not kill him. But it is of you that I wish to speak, Severus, not Harry Potter. You have been very valuable to me, very valuable."
"My lord knows I seek only to serve him."
"But let me go and find the boy, my lord. Let me bring him to you. I know I can." "I have told you no,"
said Voldemort.
and Harry caught the glint of red in his eyes as he turned again. And the swishing of his cloak was like the slithering of a snake, and he felt Voldemort's impatience in his burning scar.
My concern at the moment, Severus, is what will happen when I finally meet the boy.
My lord, there can be no question, surely.
But there is a question, Severus. There is.
Voldemort halted, and Harry could see him plainly again as he slid the Elder Wand through his white fingers, staring at Snape.
Why did both the wands I have used fail when directed at Harry Potter?
I cannot answer that, my lord.
Can't you?
The stab of rage felt like a spike driven through Harry's head. He forced his own fist into his mouth to stop himself from crying out in pain. He closed his eyes, and suddenly he was Voldemort, looking into Snape's pale face.
My wand of you did everything of which I asked it, Severus, except to kill Harry Potter. Twice it failed. Ollivander told me under torture of the twin cores, told me to take another's wand. I did so, but Lucius's wand chattered upon meeting Potter's.
I have no explanation, my lord. Snape was not looking at Voldemort now. His dark eyes were still fixed upon the coiling serpent in its protective sphere.
I sought a third wand, Severus, the Elder Wand, the Wand of Destiny, the Death Stick. I took it from its previous master. I took it from the grave of Albus Dumbledore.
And now Snape looked at Voldemort, and Snape's face was like a death mask. It was marble white, and so still that when he spoke, it was a shock to see that anyone lived behind the blank eyes.
My lord, let me go to the boy. All this long night, when I am on the brink of victory, I have sat here,
said Voldemort, his voice barely louder than a whisper.
Wondering why the Elder Wand refuses to be what it ought to be. Refuses to perform as legend says it must perform for its rightful owner. And I think I have the answer.
Snape did not speak.
Perhaps you already know it. You are a clever man after all, Severus. You have been a good and faithful servant, and I regret what must happen. My lord, the Elder Wand cannot serve me properly, Severus, because I am not its true master. The Elder Wand belongs to the wizard who killed its last owner. You killed Albus Dumbledore. While you live, Severus, the Elder Wand cannot be truly mine.
My lord, Snape protested, raising his wand.
It cannot be any other way, said Voldemort. I must master the wand, Severus. Master the wand, and I master Potter at last.
And Voldemort swiped the air with the Elder Wand. It did nothing to Snape, who for a split second seemed to think he had been reprieved. But then Voldemort's intention became clear. The snake's cage was rolling through the air, and before Snape could do anything more than yell, it had encased him, head and shoulders, and Voldemort spoke in parcel tongue.
Kill.
There was a terrible scream. Harry saw Snape's face losing the little color it had left. It whitened as his black eyes widened, as the snake's fangs pierced his neck, as he failed to push the enchanted cage off himself, as his knees gave way and he fell to the floor.
I regret it,
said Voldemort coldly. He turned away. There was no sadness in him, no remorse. It was time to leave this shack and take charge. With a wand that would now do his full bidding. He pointed it at the starry cage holding the snake, which drifted upward, off Snape, who fell sideways onto the floor, blood gushing from the wounds in his neck. Voldemort swept from the room without a backward glance, and the great serpent floated after him in its huge protective sphere. Back in the tunnel, and his own mind, Harry opened his eyes. He had drawn blood biting down on his knuckles in the effort not to shout out. Now he was looking through the tiny crack between crate and wall, watching a foot in a black boot trembling on the floor.
"Harry,"
breathed Hermione behind him. But he had already pointed his wand at the crate, blocking his view. It lifted an inch into the air and drifted sideways silently. As quietly as he could, he pulled himself up into the room. He did not know why he was doing it, why he was approaching the dying man. He did not know what he felt as he saw Snape's white face and the fingers trying to staunch the bloody wound at his neck. Harry took off the invisibility cloak and looked down upon the man he hated, whose widening black eyes found Harry as he tried to speak. Harry bent over him, and Snape seized the front of his robes and pulled him close. A terrible rasping, gurgling noise issued from Snape's throat.
Take it.
Something more than blood was leaking from Snape. Silvery blue, neither gas nor liquid, it gushed from his mouth and his ears and his eyes. And Harry knew what it was, but did not know what to do. A flask, conjured from thin air, was thrust into his shaking hands by Hermione. Harry lifted the silvery substance into it with his wand. When the flask was full to the brim, and Snape looked as though there was no blood left in him, his grip on Harry's robe slackened.
"Look at me,"
he whispered. The green eyes found the black. But after a second, something in the depths of the dark pair seemed to vanish, leaving them fixed, blank, and empty. The hand holding Harry thudded to the floor, and Snape moved no more. Chapter 33, The Prince's Tale. Harry remained kneeling at Snape's side, simply staring down at him, until quite suddenly a high, cold voice spoke so close to them that Harry jumped to his feet, the flask gripped tightly in his hands, thinking that Voldemort had re-entered the room. Voldemort's voice reverberated from the walls and floor, and Harry realized that he was talking to Hogwarts and to all the surrounding area, that the residents of Hogsmeade and all those still fighting in the castle would hear him as clearly as if he stood beside them, his breath on the back of their necks, a death blow away.
"You have fought," said the high, cold voice, "valiantly. Lord Voldemort knows how to value bravery. Yet you have sustained heavy losses. If you continue to resist me, you will all die, one by one. I do not wish this to happen. Every drop of magical blood spilled is a loss and a waste. Lord Voldemort is merciful. I command my forces to retreat immediately. You have 1 hour. Dispose of your dead with dignity. Treat your injured. I speak now, Harry Potter, directly to you. You have permitted your friends to die for you rather than face me yourself. I shall wait for 1 hour in the Forbidden Forest. If, at the end of that hour, you have not come to me, have not given yourself up, then battle recommences. This time I shall enter the fray myself, Harry Potter, and I shall find you, and I shall punish every last man, woman, and child who has tried to conceal you from me. 1 hour!"
Both Ron and Hermione shook their heads frantically, looking at Harry.
"Don't listen to him,"
said Ron.
"It'll be all right,"
said Hermione wildly.
Let's get back to the castle. If he's gone to the forest, we'll need to think of a new plan."
She glanced at Snape's body, then hurried back to the tunnel entrance. Ron followed her. Harry gathered up the invisibility cloak, then looked down at Snape. He did not know what to feel, except shock at the way Snape had been killed, and the reason for which it had been done. They crawled back through the tunnel, none of them talking, and Harry wondered whether Ron and Hermione could still hear Voldemort ringing in their heads, as he could.
"You have permitted your friends to die for you rather than face me yourself. I shall wait for 1 hour in the Forbidden Forest. 1 hour!"
Small bundles seemed to litter the lawn at the front of the castle. It could only be an hour or so from dawn, yet it was pitch black. The three of them hurried toward the stone steps. A lone clog, the size of a small boat, lay abandoned in front of them. There was no other sign of Grawp or of his attacker. The castle was unnaturally silent. There were no flashes of light now, no bangs or screams or shouts. The flagstones of the deserted entrance hall were stained with blood. Emeralds were still scattered all over the floor, along with pieces of marble and splintered wood. Part of the banisters had been blown away.
"Where is everyone?" whispered Hermione.
Ron led the way to the great hall. Harry stopped in the doorway. The house tables were gone, and the room was crowded. The survivors stood in groups, their arms around each other's necks. The injured were being treated upon the raised platform by Madame Pomfrey and a group of helpers. Ferenczi was amongst the injured. His flank poured blood, and he shook where he lay, unable to stand. The dead lay in a row in the middle of the hall. Harry could not see Fred's body because his family surrounded him. George was kneeling at his head. Mrs. Weasley was lying across Fred's chest, her body shaking, Mr. Weasley stroking her hair while tears cascaded down his cheeks. Without a word to Harry, Ron and Hermione walked away. Harry saw Hermione approach Ginny, whose face was swollen and blotchy, and hug her. Ron joined Bill, Fleur, and Percy, who flung an arm around Ron's shoulders. As Ginny and Hermione moved closer to the rest of the family, Harry had a clear view of the bodies lying next to Fred. Remus and Tonks, pale and still and peaceful-looking, apparently asleep beneath the dark, enchanted ceiling. The great hall seemed to fly away, become smaller, shrink, as Harry reeled backward from the doorway. He could not draw breath. He could not bear to look at any of the other bodies, to see who else had died for him. He could not bear to join the Weasleys, could not look into their eyes when, if he had given himself up in the first place, Fred might never have died. He turned away and ran up the marble staircase. Lupin, Tonks. He yearned not to feel. He wished he could rip out his heart, his innards, everything that was screaming inside him. The castle was completely empty. Even the ghosts seemed to have joined the mass mourning in the great hall. Harry ran without stopping, clutching the crystal flask of Snape's last thoughts, and he did not slow down until he reached the stone gargoyle guarding the headmaster's office.
"Password?"
"Dumbledore," said Harry without thinking, because it was he whom he yearned to see, and to his surprise the gargoyle slid aside, revealing the spiral staircase behind. But when Harry burst into the circular office, he found a change. The portraits that hung all around the walls were empty. Not a single headmaster or headmistress remained to see him. All, it seemed, had flitted away, charging through the paintings that lined the castle so that they could have a clear view of what was going on. Harry glanced hopelessly at Dumbledore's deserted frame, which hung directly behind the headmaster's chair, then turned his back on it. The stone pensive lay in the cabinet where it had always been. Harry heaved it onto the desk and poured Snape's memories into the wide basin with its runic markings around the edge. To escape into someone else's head would be a blessed relief. Nothing that even Snape had left him could be worse than his own thoughts. The memories swirled, silver-white and strange, and without hesitating, with a feeling of reckless abandonment, as though this would assuage his torturing grief, Harry dived. He fell headlong into sunlight, and his feet found warm ground. When he straightened up, he saw that he was in a nearly deserted playground. A single huge chimney dominated the distant skyline. Two girls were swinging backward and forward, and a skinny boy was watching them from behind a clump of bushes. His black hair was overlong, and his clothes were so mismatched that it looked deliberate. Two short jeans, a shabby, over-large coat that might have belonged to a grown man, an odd smock-like shirt. Harry moved closer to the boy. Snape looked no more than 9 or 10 years old, sallow, small, stringy. There was undisguised greed in his thin face as he watched the younger of the two girls swinging higher and higher than her sister.
"Lily, don't do it!"
shrieked the elder of the two. But the girl had let go of the swing at the very height of its arc and flown into the air, quite literally flown, launched herself skyward with a great shout of laughter, and instead of crumpling on the playground asphalt, she soared like a trapeze artist through the air, staying up far too long, landing far too lightly.
"Mummy told you not to!"
Petunia stopped her swing by dragging the heels of her sandals on the ground, making a crunching, grinding sound, then leapt up, hands on hips.
"Mummy said you weren't allowed, Lily."
"But I'm fine," said Lily, still giggling.
"Toonie, look at this! Watch what I can do!"
Petunia glanced around. The playground was deserted apart from themselves and, though the girls did not know it, Snape. Lily picked up a fallen flower from the bush behind which Snape lurked. Petunia advanced, evidently torn between curiosity and disapproval. Lily waited until Petunia was near enough to have a clear view, then held out her palm. The flower sat there, opening and closing its petals like some bizarre, many-lipped oyster.
"Stop it!"
shrieked Petunia.
"It's not hurting you," said Lily,
but she closed her hand on the blossom and threw it back to the ground.
"It's not right,"
said Petunia, but her eyes had followed the flower's flight to the ground and lingered upon it.
"How do you do it?"
she added, and there was definite longing in her voice.
"It's obvious, isn't it?"
Snape could no longer contain himself, but had jumped out from behind the bushes. Petunia shrieked and ran backward toward the swings, but Lily, though clearly startled, remained where she was. Snape seemed to regret his appearance. A dull flush of colour mounted the sallow cheeks as he looked at Lily.
"What's obvious?" asked Lily.
Snape had an air of nervous excitement. With a glance at the distant Petunia, now hovering beside the swings, he lowered his voice and said,
"I know what you are."
"What do you mean?"
You're a witch,"
whispered Snape. She looked affronted.
"That's not a very nice thing to say to somebody."
She turned, nose in the air, and marched off toward her sister.
"No,"
said Snape. He was highly colored now, and Harry wondered why he did not take off the ridiculously large coat, unless it was because he did not want to reveal the smock beneath it. He flapped after the girls, looking ludicrously bat-like, like his older self. The sisters considered him, united in disapproval, both holding on to one of the swing poles as though it was the safe place in tag.
"You are,"
said Snape to Lily.
"You are a witch. I've been watching you for a while, but there's nothing wrong with that. My mum's one, and I'm a wizard."
Petunia's laugh was like cold water.
"Wizard!"
she shrieked. Her courage returned now that she had recovered from the shock of his unexpected appearance.
"I know who you are. You're that Snape boy. They live down Spinner's End by the river,"
she told Lily, and it was evident from her tone that she considered the address a poor recommendation.
"Why have you been spying on us?"
"Haven't been spying," said Snape, hot and uncomfortable and dirty-haired in the bright sunlight.
"Wouldn't spy on you, anyway,"
he added spitefully.
"You're a muggle."
Though Petunia evidently did not understand the word, she could hardly mistake the tone.
"Lily, come on, we're leaving,"
she said shrilly. Lily obeyed her sister at once, glaring at Snape as she left. He stood watching them as they marched through the playground gate, and Harry, the only one left to observe him, recognized Snape's bitter disappointment and understood that Snape had been planning this moment for a while, and that it had all gone wrong. The scene dissolved, and before Harry knew it, reformed around him. He was now in a small thicket of trees. He could see a sunlit river glittering through their trunks. The shadows cast by the trees made a basin of cool green shade. Two children sat facing each other, cross-legged on the ground. Snape had removed his coat now. His odd smock looked less peculiar in the half-light.
"And the Ministry can punish you if you do magic outside school. You get letters."
"But I have done magic outside school." "We're all right. We haven't got wands yet. They let you off when you're a kid, and you can't help it. But once you're 11,
he nodded importantly,
"and they start training you, then you've got to go careful."
There was a little silence. Lily had picked up a fallen twig and twirled it in the air, and Harry knew that she was imagining sparks trailing from it. Then she dropped the twig, leaned in toward the boy and said,
"It is real, isn't it? It's not a joke. Petunia says you're lying to me. Petunia says there isn't a Hogwarts. It is real, isn't it?"
"It's real for us," said Snape.
"Not for her. But we'll get the letter, you and me."
"Really?"
whispered Lily.
"Definitely," said Snape.
And even with his poorly cut hair and his odd clothes, he struck an oddly impressive figure sprawled in front of her, brimful of confidence in his destiny.
"And will it really come by owl?"
Lily whispered.
"Normally," said Snape. "But you're muggle-born, so someone from the school will have to come and explain to your parents."
"Does it make a difference, being muggle-born?"
Snape hesitated. His black eyes, eager in the greenish gloom, moved over the pale face, the dark red hair.
"No," he said. "It doesn't make any difference."
"Good,"
said Lily, relaxing. It was clear that she had been worrying.
"You've got loads of magic," said Snape. "I saw that. All the time I was watching you."
His voice trailed away. She was not listening, but had stretched out on the leafy ground and was looking up at the canopy of leaves overhead. He watched her as greedily as he had watched her in the playground.
"How are things at your house?"
Lily asked. A little crease appeared between his eyes.
"Fine,"
he said.
"They're not arguing any more?"
"Oh, yes, they're arguing," said Snape.
He picked up a fistful of leaves and began tearing them apart, apparently unaware of what he was doing.
"But it won't be that long, and I'll be gone."
"Doesn't your dad like magic?"
"He doesn't like anything much," said Snape.
"Severus?"
A little smile twisted Snape's mouth when she said his name.
"Yeah?"
"Tell me about the Dementors again."
"What do you want to know about them for?"
"If I use magic outside school..."
"They wouldn't give you to the Dementors for that. Dementors are for people who do really bad stuff. They guard the wizard prison, Azkaban. You're not going to end up in Azkaban. You're too..."
He turned red again and shredded more leaves. Then a small rustling noise behind Harry made him turn. Petunia, hiding behind a tree, had lost her footing.
"Toonie!"
said Lily, surprise and welcome in her voice. But Snape had jumped to his feet.
"Who's spying now?"
he shouted.
"What do you want?"
Petunia was breathless, alarmed at being caught. Harry could see her struggling for something hurtful to say.
"What is that you're wearing, anyway?"
she said, pointing at Snape's chest.
"Your mum's blouse?"
There was a crack. A branch over Petunia's head had fallen. Lily screamed. The branch caught Petunia on the shoulder, and she staggered backward and burst into tears.
"Toonie!"
But Petunia was running away. Lily rounded on Snape.
"Did you make that happen?"
"No!"
He looked both defiant and scared.
"You did!"
She was backing away from him.
"You did! You hurt her!"
"No! No, I didn't!"
But the lie did not convince Lily. After one last burning look, she ran from the little thicket, off after her sister, and Snape looked miserable and confused. And the scene reformed. Harry looked around. He was on platform 9 3/4, and Snape stood beside him, slightly hunched, next to a thin, sallow-faced, sour-looking woman who greatly resembled him. Snape was staring at a family of four a short distance away. The two girls stood a little apart from their parents. Lily seemed to be pleading with her sister. Harry moved closer to listen.
"I'm sorry, Toonie. I'm sorry. Listen."
She caught her sister's hand and held tight to it, even though Petunia tried to pull it away.
"Maybe once I'm there..."
"No, listen, Toonie.
Maybe once I'm there, I'll be able to go to Professor Dumbledore and persuade him to change his mind.
I don't want to go,
said Petunia, and she dragged her hand back out of her sister's grasp.